This is Empower the Spirit with Dr. Douglas Kelly.
Hello and good evening. Welcome to Empower the Spirit. My name is Doug Kelly. It's so good to have you with me tonight for Sunday, September 11th, 2011. Of course, this was a momentous anniversary, 10-year anniversary of 9/11. Can't believe 10 years have passed so quickly. And you know, what can I say? It's been a time of remembrance and a time of introspection and looking at how the world's changed in the last 10 years. I just wanted to note it, commemorate it, and bring it out on the table because of the date. I'm not going to focus on it. My best goes with all those who lost folks 10 years ago. Anyway, glad you could join me for Empower the Spirit, which is a weekly broadcast of the Metaphysical Church of Humanistic Science. It's part of our regular church services. Our mission is to explore and empower the human spirit. We'd like to welcome those who are listening to the live program this evening, as well as those listening to the archive. Tonight I'm going to be talking about the metaphysical side of paranormal research, and it's kind of a special show tonight in some ways. I'm going to be releasing a video or sharing a video link with you after my part of the program, so hang tough. If you were with us or listening to the program or listening to the archive from August 14th here about a month or so ago, we had Mark L. Cowden on the program. He's the author of Spirit Voices, and we talked about how he had recorded perhaps the first documented live conversation, recorded conversation between a medium and, you know, the afterlife or the spirit world. And we talked about that video a little bit, and there was some, you know, there was some issues, and he didn't want to get that video out to everybody because, you know, he doesn't have the copyright on it and all that, but he's able to share it with us to let us share it with you, that is, for a few days. And so at the end of my program here in a little bit, just a few minutes, I'm going to post that link in the Blog Talk Radio chat room, and that video will be up for just a few days, and then I have to take it down. So what we're going to do is I'm going to go through my part. I'm going to release the link to the video, and I'll share it with you. It's going to be on the church services page at mchschurch.org. Click on the church services button on the left navigation bar, and then scroll down to the archives for September 11th, 2011, and the video will be there. It's not there now, but it will be there when I finish this program, or my part of the program. So that's an exciting thing coming up. Then, of course, following my part of the program, Dr. Vicki Hunter will have her psychic perspective. She has a special guest with her tonight, Camille Edwards, and she'll be interviewing her and discussing psychic-related things as well as taking your calls for psychic advice. I'd like to also invite you. I guess I'm going to put this out once. If you, during my part of the program, if you have a paranormal experience you'd like to share briefly, then I would invite you to call in. The numbers are on your screen, 714-459-3973, or you can use your Skype button on the radio page if you have Skype. And you can call in. John Hightower will, of course, be screening your calls. You can say hi to him, and then we'll get you on. But just keep the stories brief, and then we'll get on with the program. All right. I think I have covered everything. We're going to talk about the metaphysical side of paranormal research tonight. So I'm going to go over a few topics, or a few points, I should say. These are points from my experience. And this program is really aimed at those with an interest in paranormal phenomena, and especially those who are paranormal researchers or investigators. And when I talk about the paranormal or the paranormal field, I am really referring to the entire broad field. And that includes the typical haunting type research. It includes parapsychology, ufology, cryptozoology. I'm just kind of putting everything into it. And I want to talk about how it's all the same thing, only different. In fact, the metaphysical side of paranormal research, well, you know, can something only have one side? I suppose. And if it does, then it is metaphysical. I mean, paranormal is metaphysical, in all the ways that matter. I remember I attended my first UFO lecture when I was 18 years old. That was about, maybe 8 years ago. Do you believe that? I wouldn't. That was a total lie. It was more like 34 years ago, and it was fascinating, but since my religion didn't believe in UFOs at the time, I was kind of curtailed on that one, which is a shame. You know, if only I'd started my anomalous research way back then, you know, how much more would I have done to date. But there are those two saddest words in the English language, if only, and the good side of that is I was finally able to lose my religion and in a position to begin my anomalous research back in 2005. And it's interesting because I never lost an interest in it. And I read book after book after book after book on all types of things. So anyway, it's just, you know, I look at the mysterious and the paranormal, the anomalous, the mysterious, the mysteries of life. And I'm in love with it. I mean, can you be in love with that? I'm in love with it. I have a love affair with it. I am so fascinated, and it's just always been a part of who I am, and I can't let it go. It's part of who I am. And so the cool thing about it is not only have I acted on that love, an interest in all that is mysterious, but, you know, I've done something. I mean, I started Paranexus, Anomalous Research Association, here several years ago, and I've even grown from there. And now there's MCHS Church, which encompasses all that's paranormal and all that's good and all that is about the human condition. And so I don't actually, it's interesting because this is part of the program, I don't actually study the paranormal per se. I study the human condition by way of anomalous phenomena. And there is a difference. And that's one of the things I'm going to cover. So tonight, in the next few minutes, I'm going to cover why anomalous research and metaphysics are actually the same thing. I'm going to talk about possible explanations for anomalous phenomena. And I want to share with you the ultimate mission of the paranormal researcher. To my knowledge, you won't hear this anywhere else. The ultimate mission of the paranormal researcher, in my opinion, is groundbreaking. It is the thing to do for anybody who would study or research or investigate the paranormal in whatever form they do. And again, if you have had a paranormal experience that's unique, that's interesting, and you want to call in and share it, go ahead and dial in. I won't take the calls for a few minutes yet, but you can dial in and get on the list. And if you do, just be very brief. We won't have a lot of time to go into it. All right, let's talk about parapsychology. I want to talk about how, essentially, haunting, paranormal-type stuff, psi phenomena, ufology, and cryptozoology are pretty much the same thing, only different. Parapsychology basically is the study of human abilities that lie outside of the accepted senses. It usually involves psychic or psi abilities, all the clairs, you know, clairsentience, claircognizance, clairaudience, clair this, clair that, and clair the other thing. It also includes psychokinesis, which we call PK for short. Sometimes we call it recurrent spontaneous psychokinesis, which is RSPK. Basically, psychokinesis is the ability to move things with your mind or affect material matter with your mind. Parapsychology also can include psychic healing, remote viewing. In fact, some people think that, years ago, science, in a branch of science, perhaps on a fringe as far as they're concerned, kind of rebranded ESP and called it remote viewing or RV. Parapsychology delves deep into the metaphysics or into metaphysics to the extent that boundary lines separating the two can be very blurry. And parapsychology was born of psychical research, which started in the late 19th century. So, parapsychology, and let me share a couple of other points with parapsychology. Parapsychology proper, shall we call it, is conducted by academic scientists who are, in my opinion, considered, and not even in my opinion, they're considered on the fringe of science by the scientific community, but then again, who isn't, other than certain scientists? But parapsychologists study psi phenomena, and these academics who are doctors and highly educated and all that, and consider themselves as these parapsychologists proper, they don't get into ghosts and stuff for the most part. Now, everybody's a little different, but for the most part, these guys are studying psi phenomena, as I mentioned earlier, ESP, the clairs, psi ability, psychokinesis. And they take a very scientific approach to it. And it's interesting, just a side note, I've noticed in not only interviewing them for my radio programs in the past, but also in my research, and this is just something that just, I don't know, doesn't quite resonate with me, but they so want to be accepted by the scientific community that they almost go overboard. You know, it's like a jilted lover almost. They want to be accepted. But the problem with, or I should say the challenge with paranormal research is that it's almost impossible, if not impossible, to explain in scientific terms, at least currently, at the current point. So parapsychology is the study of the mind and psi ability and all that, and it really branches out into other things. And I'll get to that in just a sec here. Let's talk about something that I am terming paraanthropology. If parapsychology does not specifically study the human experiences with psi phenomena, this is among parapsychologists proper now, as they relate to all types of anomalous events, such as UFOs and hauntings and Bigfoot and all that, then we need this a term to describe that kind of research, which is what I term paraanthropology. Now, strictly speaking, the field of anthropology should cover all things in the human experience. Doesn't that make sense? Just as parapsychology should actually cover all things beyond classical psychology. But in practice, neither field is considered to really cover human paranormal experiences. In fact, while anthropology does deal with cultural superstitions, it doesn't really deal with the potential reality of anomalous phenomena. A sub-discipline of cultural anthropology does come close to studying anomalous phenomena, but doesn't quite get there. It's called transpersonal anthropology. It's defined as the study of the relationship between altered states of consciousness and culture. It really focuses on the here and the now and what's visible and all that, superstitions and culture. Another potential field that comes into play here that would be important would be transpersonal psychology. Transpersonal psychology suggests that transpersonal psychology is concerned with the study of humanity's highest potential, and they do recognize spiritual transcendent states of consciousness. It's like psychology that will deal with the issues but takes the spiritual into account as well. Transpersonal psychologists proper still don't really delve into the paranormal, in my opinion, like they ought to. So we really need a field of study that specifically targets the greater meaning of anomalous phenomena within the context of not only society, but with individuals as well. Anthropology as a field really attempts to understand human nature from more of a global perspective. Psychology as a field attempts to understand human nature from an individual perspective. In other words, anthropology looks at the forest, whereas psychology looks at the individual trees. To properly understand the potential meaning of anomalous phenomena within the context of the total human experience, we need a blend of anthropology, psychology, and metaphysics. After all, the total human experience involves elements of both the macro and the micro, the big and the small, the universal and the personal, so to speak. Now, this term paraanthropology is actually a term that it wasn't invented by me. In fact, interestingly, here back in 2009, it was a summer day. I had a friend and colleague of mine over, Grant Rubendunst, who is also co-host on Paranexus Universe Radio that we used to do. And he's a licensed clinical social worker, as well as an anomalous researcher. And we were talking about this whole thing, and he came up with the word or the term paraanthropology, and we both liked it immediately. And I did look it up, and it is it's not found really online, hardly at all. There's one kind of vague reference to it that defines it as the study of paranormal phenomena in tribal, traditional, and or non-literate cultures. But again, it still doesn't target the human condition, that definition. So for the purposes of clarity of direction, I would like to redefine or refine that definition for paraanthropology to read the psychoanthropological and existential study of anomalous phenomena on the human condition. Now I'm really alluding here to the ultimate mission of the paranormal researcher. In my opinion, paraanthropology would include the psi research of parapsychology, but it would go further into existential reasons or potential existential reasons for anomalous phenomena. You could say that paraanthropology combines parapsychology, transpersonal anthropology, and transpersonal psychology. Boy, those are a mouthful, huh? You know, here's an example. Why do many people experience these types of phenomena while others don't? Why? What's up with that? Why do some UFOs seemingly appear on command, especially if you're that prophet Yahweh? Why do some of these UFOs seem to change their direction of flight due to the thoughts of an observer? That's been reported a number of times. Does consciousness have anything to do with the physical manifestation of a spirit? Is consciousness required to manifest a ghost? And I'm talking about on the part of the percipient or the human seeing the ghost. Do spirits only interact with us because we are there? Now, that's a big question right there. There's been some research, some evidence that's been collected where spirits seem to be active even when there is nobody there. In fact, I was on an investigation some years ago, and we had been actively investigating. We were taking a break. I left the digital recorders going in the living room, and we all went out to take a break. There was nobody in the house. And in reviewing those tapes, I came up with an EVP that was definite and basically said, help. You know, it's another common EVP thing, but it was there, and none of us did it. We were outside. So that's an interesting question. You know, it's like, hey, you know, if a tree falls in this forest and nobody's there, does it make a sound? That kind of a thing. Some other cases too. Something that's been reported several times and often reported in conjunction with UFO sightings is Bigfoot-like creatures with glowing red eyes. In fact, a colleague of mine just a few days ago, less than a week ago, had an experience here in Florida at his cabin, and I've been there. We camped out there here, gosh, almost 2 years ago now, or a year and a half ago anyway, and looking for Bigfoot, but we didn't see anything at the time. But this is what he reported, that he was out there getting his stuff together. It was night. He saw these two glowing red eyes about, 8 feet or so off the ground. He had a camera, but he didn't have his night shot camera, so he put that down and went to grab his night shot so he could get it, and it was gone by that time. But this is he has some UFO experiences in connection with this too. So that's an interesting thing. Where does this come from? You know, my big question is, why is it that we can't seem to nail any of this stuff down? It's like Bigfoot or UFOs or ghosts. We just can't seem to nail it down. It's very weird. And of course, it all drives my theory that you boil it all down, and it boils down to fear and confusion. If you're seeing a ghost, or a person seeing a ghost, they're usually fearful. But if you're a researcher, it often leads to confusion because you can't make hide or tail of it, head or tails. All right, so the point that I'm trying to make here is there's a lot of these questions and they all overlap. For example, abductees, alien abductees, often report PK events, psychokinesis events. Lights will turn on and off by themselves after an abduction event. The TV will turn off and on by itself. Things will move. They will essentially have the same types of experiences that somebody who might report a haunting would have. They're almost no different. And it's fascinating because all of these effects, like PK, things moving on their own, lights turning on and off, they all happen regardless of what kind of phenomena you've almost seen. I had a similar thing happen to me. I was on a UFO investigation, and I've talked about this before on various shows, and I'm sitting there at the kitchen table. There's nobody in the kitchen. One of the people that live there, their son, 14, goes walking on through the kitchen, and about 10 feet away from me, the water faucet turns on all by itself. I was sitting there right there. There was nobody else by it. There was nobody within feet of it. And I heard this funky noise, and I looked at him and says, what's that noise? And he looks over at the sink, and the water faucet's running. It was cool. I loved it. You know, nobody did it. I mean, I don't know how it happened, but it's interesting that he walked through the kitchen, and when he did, it turned on. That leads me to believe that it might have been a PK event, psychokinesis, and him as the agent. So let's talk about some scientific and psychological explanations for some of this psi phenomena. Now, some of it we cannot explain. That's just ghosts. But most of it we can. Are there some rational explanations for some of it? Yes. And one of the things that we would need to take into consideration is this thing called cognitive bias. So what is cognitive bias? Well, it's kind of a fancy word for just bias. It means belief, predetermined belief, preconceived notions. It describes the observer effects in the human mind, some of which can lead to perceptual distortion, inaccurate judgment, or illogical interpretation. Some examples, wishful thinking, stereotyping, racial prejudice, other biases, these are all types of cognitive bias. In parapsychology and anomalous research, bias also exists. You can see it in pareidolia or apophenia. Many people know this as matrixing. And what is that? Well, take a look at the sky. You see clouds, and we can often make shapes out of these clouds. That's pareidolia, also called apophenia and loosely called matrixing. It's basically a result of the mind trying to bring order to disorder. One of the greatest things our mind does is put order to things that we see. And so we can have these biases that will affect what we see and how we experience things. Another place that pareidolia is experienced by a lot of the amateur investigators, a.k.a. ghost hunters, is when they see faces and orbs. It's matrixing. Another type of cognitive bias relevant to paranormal research is called illusory correlation. It basically means inaccurately perceiving a relationship between two events, either because of some kind of preconceived notion or prejudice or selective processing of information. This we actually see quite a bit. One of the things that researchers have to be concerned of, and one of the questions I ask clients is, you know, what's your interest in the paranormal? I mean, are you on the edge of your seat watching the reality ghost hunting shows every week and you can't get enough of it? Well, you know, I've had those kinds of clients, and they're absolutely convinced their house is haunted, and it's not. There was nothing found. And so things might happen, but then you have to wonder how bad do they want it to happen, and is it generated by them? Bumps in the night, you know, the house settling, these are all aspects of illusory correlation. Vivid dreams, in fact, you can, you know, even sleep paralysis. You can wake up in a hypnagogic state, your body's paralyzed because it thinks you're supposed to be asleep, and that lasts for a moment or two or whatever, and it can be terrifying to people who experience it, and almost half of the adult population do at some point in their life. But you know, we can interpret these things as a demon attack or an alien abduction or whatever. I'm not saying that all of these things can be attributed to illusory correlation or cognitive bias. I'm saying that most of them can. In my experience, a good 90% of these cases can be explained rationally, either with psychology or with natural phenomena, natural explanations. Another interesting possibility is ELS, or extremely low frequencies. Dr. Michael Persinger has conducted a lot of experiments with what has been called the God helmet. And what it does is it applies electromagnetic fields to the frontal lobes. And they do these testing, you know, with subjects, and they will apply this electromagnetic fields to their frontal lobes, and they will report that they feel a presence. Some of them have felt the presence of God. Some of them felt like there was somebody there. So there could be some other explanations for that as well. So let me just kind of sum up where I've been and what I've been talking about here. We're talking about the metaphysical side of paranormal research. My contention is it's all metaphysical, because metaphysics has to deal with consciousness and existence. Understanding the role that paranormal phenomena play in the human experience is all a metaphysical thing. It will help us to understand us better. Let's talk now about the ultimate mission of paranormal research. And again, I think this is a groundbreaking point. You won't hear it, to my knowledge, anywhere else. I think it's what all paranormal researchers ought to be doing. I think this is the way they should all look at it. When we look at the varied types of research being conducted today, we find one thing in common, and that is they are all really trying to understand and enhance the human condition. Think about this. You know, let's just take two: cancer research and space research. Cancer research is certainly conducted to enhance the human condition by discovering treatments for the disease and trying to get rid of it altogether. An additional benefit to humanity is the knowledge of biology that results of this research that's going on. Now consider space research. It's also enhanced the human condition. It's added to our knowledge of the universe. It's developed many products that make our life easier. And many of these, by the way, have been directly related to medical research too. And again, this enhances the human condition. Now, one quick thing here. When I talk about that all types of research are designed to enhance and understand the human condition, there's a couple that are not. And I'm talking about warfare-type research, weapons research. I suppose one could go out on a limb and say that, you know, our research into weapons does have indirect benefits in other areas. That may be true, but I don't consider weapons research as trying to better understand and enhance the human condition. It's more like, who cares about the human condition? Let's just get rid of it. Now, let's consider the motivation behind paranormal research. I just discussed the motivation behind typical research to better understand and enhance the human condition. Now, what about paranormal research, specifically answering the question of whether our essence survives the death of the physical body? If we can prove it, that is, if we can prove that the consciousness survives the death of the physical body in a coherent fashion, if we can prove it, it would verify the existence of the afterlife and bring solid hope to billions of people, wouldn't it? What would this knowledge do for humanity? Well, think about it. Among other things, it would eliminate fear of death. It would show us that this life is not all there is, and it would reassure us that our dear loved ones who have passed, they're alive and doing well. And it would give us hope of seeing them again. So that's if we can prove it. But what if, on the other hand, we prove that our consciousness does not survive the physical death of the body? Would we not still gain insight into the human mind, into human psychology, into the impact that deep belief can have on human perception? Wouldn't we? Now consider the ramifications of three different research missions or approaches. There are, well, a couple of them are common to paranormal investigators. First one, let's suppose that your sole mission as a paranormal researcher is to prove the existence of ghosts and spirits. Now, if you were to one day prove such a thing, you would obviously, quote, win, so to speak. You proved it, you won. However, if you were to discover that proof basically was false, there is no such thing as ghosts and spirits, then you would, quote, lose, so to speak. So if your mission is to prove they exist and you do it, you win. If your mission is to prove they exist and you don't do it, in fact, you prove they don't exist, you lose. That's just a manner of speaking. Now, secondly, let's suppose that your sole mission as a researcher is to prove that ghosts and spirits do not exist. In other words, you debunk it all. Now, if you were to one day prove that they do not exist, in this perspective, you'd win, wouldn't you? And if, on the other hand, you tried to prove they didn't exist, but you came up with irrefutable proof that they do exist, from your perspective, you'd kind of lose, right? Different perspective. Now let's consider a third one, because you see, in these two first scenarios, it's either win-lose. Well, I don't like to win-lose. I believe in win-win. I want to win, regardless. So let's consider a third powerful alternative. And it involves a paradigm shift. Don't approach your investigations from the standpoint that you're there to investigate a haunting or a PK event or a UFO sighting or whatever it is. Rather, approach each investigation with a mindset that you are studying the human condition within the context of anomalous phenomena. Think about that. What's the difference? The difference is that if you only go on an investigation to sit for hours futilely trying to catch something, hoping to catch something, it'll get old. It gets old fast. Trust me. It'll get old after just a few investigations because not really much ever happens on investigations. They're usually mundane. They're usually boring. However, if you go on an investigation with the focus of better understanding why people are experiencing paranormal phenomena, you'll always come away with just a little more knowledge of human nature and psychology that you can apply to future investigations and adds to your overall research and your overall knowledge base. And this is in addition to whether you get any cool evidence or proof one way or the other. This is a humanistic approach. In other words, I'll say it again, the humanistic approach is to approach it by studying the human condition within the context of paranormal research. Because you win either way, right? I mean, whether ghosts exist or not, whether UFOs exist or not, whether Bigfoot or any other cryptid exists or not, it doesn't matter anymore, per se, because you are researching the human condition within the context of those things. You're trying to understand us. Why else do we want to know about this stuff, folks? Why do we want to know whether UFOs exist? Because it impacts us. It impacts the human condition. Same with spirits, same with Bigfoot, same with anything like this. It's a humanistic approach. It's a powerful and positive transformation from the typical paranormal or parapsychological research objective. It's an incredible evolutionary step up from the traditional approach. And it is the premise upon which I conduct my research. So, I've talked about the metaphysical side of the paranormal. It's all metaphysical. It has to do with consciousness and existence, especially when you view it as trying to better understand and enhance the human condition. Regardless of whether paranormal phenomena truly exists, and I think it does, regardless of whether it does or not, if we're studying the human condition, we win every time. Now, at the beginning of this program, I mentioned that I was going to release a link. A few weeks ago, we had Mark L. Cowden, author of Spirit Voices, on the program, and he had recorded what was perhaps the first documented evidence of a live conversation between this world, the next world. And I'm going to show you, give you the link to a short video. It's about 8 or so minutes long, and I'm going to let you watch it. Before I get into that, there is one question in the chat room from Jericho. Is the ghost box real? Can it really communicate with the other world? I'm going to give you a real short answer. The answer is it's very controversial. there's no significant evidence to my knowledge that proves it one way or another. It's like many things. Could it be? Sure. There's more to that question, though, and I know that you'll be coming on those answers in the not-too-distant future, Jericho, by way of your studies at the Metaphysics Institute. Okay, so what I'm going to do now is I'm going to give you a link, and here's how we're going to do the rest of this program. I'm going to give you a link. I'm going to wrap up my little part of the program here. I'm going to give you a link. We're going to go to a musical intermission for about the next 10 minutes, and I'm going to give you a chance to go down and go to this link and view this video. And this video, again, is only going to be available for a few days. So, you know, if you're catching this archive down the road, you're not going to be able to view it unless it gets released, you know, properly, if, or he's ever to release it publicly. So you're going to have just a few days to watch this. I'm going to allow you about 10 minutes in just a minute to watch it. And then I'd like you to come back, and Vicky, Dr. Vicky's going to start her part of the program, and her and I will discuss this video for just a moment, and then she'll continue on with her special guest, Camille Edwards. So let us begin the wrap-up here. I'm going to give you this link, and I'm going to put it in the chat room right now. As soon as I can find the chat room on my screen. Okay, I just put it in the chat room. Give me a second and go watch this. You'll have 10 minutes and view it. And then I'll talk to you in a few minutes. But this is it for my program. I appreciate you listening. Next week I'll have another topic. Until then, listen, think, learn, grow, and live. Have a great week, folks.
This has been Empower the Spirit with Dr. Douglas Kelly. To learn more about the concepts presented in this program, visit mchschurch.com. To take a metaphysics course or to get your metaphysics degree, visit metaphysicsinstitute.com.
Power of the Spirit is a production of the Metaphysical Church of Humanistic Science, Incorporated.
This is Dr. Vicky's Psychic Perspective on the MCHS Educational Network. And now, Dr. Vicky Hunter.
Good evening, everyone. This is Dr. Vicky's Psychic Perspective. Welcome. Doug Kelly is going to be staying on with us so we can have a little discussion about that awesome video that we all just watched. And by the way, that was great music in the interlude, Doug. Wonderful music. Thank you very much.
Oh, sure. And that was Kevin the Cloud and Dano from danosongs.com.
Oh, a good plug for the boys. Mm-hmm. That's great. Yeah, it really is. It's a good pick. Good pick. That was by Mark Cowden. Thank you very much, Mark L. Cowden, who has become such a good friend of MCHS Church. And he's been on the show in the past, and he has allowed us this exclusive little peek at this video. And it's just fantastic, Doug. I, of course, you know.
Well, yeah, you've got some investment here.
I'm going to admit this. watching that piece brought tears to my eyes because I so understand what that medium, and forgive me for a moment because I can't think of her name off the top. I wasn't really paying attention to that. What she goes through, and as she said, through her entire life, I understand because it's my world. You know, it's what I go through in my world. And you eventually get used to yourself, I think, and you have to grow a particular comfort in your own, as we would say at MCHS or IMHS, the self-esteem. Mm-hmm. You have to be really comfortable with yourself and know that you're not nuts, that this is a world within a world within a world. And I just can't say enough about Mark for giving us a piece of his video.
Well, he's obviously he's a psychic investigator. He's a audio technician. And let me just insert here, just in case anybody had any trouble viewing it or finding the video, and I apologize for not being a little more clear on this than I could have been, but if you go to that link I gave you, you have to scroll down the page and click on the September 2011 archives, and you'll see the video player right there. So, you know, go watch it after. If you haven't watched it, go watch it after we get done here, and then you'll be able to watch it in peace and make more sense of it.
And just to the people who will in future listen to this in the archives, let's just you and I for a moment, Doug, explain what we get to watch, what we're being privy to at this moment. If you want to give just a little bit of a background on Mark L. Cowden.
Yeah, he's, as I mentioned, a psychic investigator as well as an audio technician that works on TV shows, and they were filming a TV show, I believe, in Ireland, and it was for their local market. I don't think it's been played in the U.S., and it may have been played in other countries. You can find out more on Mark's website, which is listed there on the church page. This is under church page, the church services on mchs.org, mchschurch.org, the church services button under September 2011. Archives. If you go to August 2011 archives, you can listen to the interview with Mark L. Cowden. It's right
awesome.
There. And
awesome
it's got
interview.
His website. Yeah. And so what they were doing is, they're filming this show. They're doing what they normally do. And they have the medium. And you know what? Now I'm not recalling it. Was it Mary or something on that order? Anyway, the medium is there and she and one of the other, the hosts of the show are in this room and they are communicating with the spirit. And so she's communicating with the spirit. And unbeknownst to her, Mark is hearing these EVPs come over the recording live as she's getting the information. And then he's relaying what he's getting to the host, who's got a earpiece or an earbud there. And so this was all unbeknownst to the medium, the psychic. She's basically, it is following. It's like, she asks a question, and Mark's getting an audio response, and it's fascinating. It's incredible. I mean, it's groundbreaking. It hasn't been done, to my knowledge.
Well, and just for people who are listening, this has been attempted countless times. The audio equipment now, I believe, is so advanced and advancing so quickly that we can pick up just enormous things now that it's kind of like medicine, science, in so many ways we've come so far. Look at us, we're all on Blog Talk Radio, mm-hmm. This is amazing. And Mark is very well educated. It is his background. He was a musician. He's been in audio tech for many years and using the best high quality audio equipment.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that has a lot to do with it. It is groundbreaking. And what I believe, we hope, we can expect more of this in the future as our abilities in technology continues to evolve.
Yeah.
Would you say so?
I would say so. What's puzzling to me is, I mean, this is just a typical TV crew. They're shooting a series. Got the audio stuff. I mean, this happens many, many times. Every single documentary, every one of these shows is doing the same thing, and yet Mark's getting it. Now, I don't know what their setup is. I don't know if Mark's is any different. I don't know if I don't know how they're doing it. So that might be a good question for him on a future interview. But, you know, he got it. It's there. He wrote the book, Spirit Voices. The link to purchase the book is also there on the page and on his website. And I would recommend picking that book up. It's, you know, $15 from Amazon. So,
well, I just, again, it's what we, this is my life. I mean, I totally understand where, you know, that medium is coming from. When you have invested your life, and I have no problem people knowing this, I'm going to be 56 right away. This is my entire life. I've been hearing voices since I was a child, seeing things since I was a child. And in my day, we didn't get to talk as we do now. You know, I mean, geez, 40, 50 years ago, there was rooms for us with jackets, you know.
Free room and board.
You know, and a little pill. Mm-hmm. And you know, a little title behind our name that wasn't PhD. So, I mean, it's we have come a long way. And I find this all very exciting. And more people are talking, more people are opening up, sharing their experiences, and it's all in my lifetime. It's very exciting for me, and boy, you know, a two-way conversation with the spirit on audio tape, mm-hmm. Amazing. I love it.
It is, and that link will be up there for just a few days, and it's coming down per Mark's request. So. I will honor that in a few days. And if you're listening to the archive, you know, keep in touch, because we'll have Mark back on the show again, and we might be able to put it up again. So,
well, now let's moving on here. Speaking of people who also have particular gifts and abilities, once a month now we're going to invite students from the Institute of Metaphysical Humanistic Science, that's, you know, the partner with MCHS Church, who have been through a program, going through their bachelor's, their master's, and PhDs. Students, people who have been studying, advancing, evolving, and who would be so kind as to come on and share their life a little bit with us, share their experiences, what they're studying, why they're studying it, and just a little bit about them, because it's not just about you and me, Doug Kelly.
It's, you know, not. Surprising.
It's not.
Shatter my world.
I know, but it's not just about us. We are, you know, I really believe this. We are catalysts. You know, we're the vehicles, and I love to do that, and I love to hear other people's stories. It's one of my favorite things to do, actually. So if everyone would welcome Camille Edwards. Hello, Camille.
Hello. How are you?
I'm very well. You know, Camille called, just so our audience knows, too, Camille graciously phoned in a few weeks ago on the show, and we had a delightful conversation. And you were talking at that point, Camille, about since you were a little girl, you had these wonderful little friends. Can you maybe just tell a little bit about that while we're on the subject? Tell our audience a little bit about that.
Absolutely. My first experience was I was about 4 years old when Laurie Ann came, and she was my imaginary playmate. And I never saw Laurie Ann, but I certainly heard her, and we had a wonderful life as a child together on many adventures that we took. And through her, I was able to discover things that no child would have discovered. It was an amazing experience to have her as a friend. And then I was able.
When you say you discovered things, what kinds of things are you referring to?
Well, she would teach me how to sneak up on and watch them, to capture them without hurting them. She would tell me, she would whisper what to do and how to do it. And it was just an amazing experience, because as a five-year-old, I could catch birds in my hand. And
wow.
It was because of her telling me what to do and when to do it. It was like she was my guide.
Fabulous.
It was a fabulous experience.
So as you got a little bit older, what happened then?
Well, as I got a little bit older, of course, the adults started making fun of my imaginary playmate and started telling me, you will grow out of her. She will, you know, you will no longer need her one day. And then they would laugh if I discussed her. So about the age of 8 or 9, I eventually lost contact with Lorianne because I was told it was not the thing to do.
Mm-hmm.
And I moved on to other things.
But others came back to you as you got older? Is that how you started to come back to it or awaken again?
It was in my 20s that I started awakening again, early 20s, because I was always told that I'm of the same age as you. I'm 53, and I was told that there's just certain things that you don't talk about, and one is that you can see and hear things that other people cannot hear. And I've always had that ability, but I never knew what it was, and I could never discuss it with anyone. So, of course, it frightened me. But once I got into my 20s, I just accepted it as part of my life. But no one was there to coach me and work with me and tell me how to manage these abilities. So,
Sorry, go ahead.
Oh, the spirits would come to me, but I wouldn't know what to do.
I think that's a pretty big dilemma for most people. And then people would ask, well, then why me? Does that make sense?
Yes, it does. And like you said earlier, you just don't ask anyone. You keep it to yourself and you start thinking, well, maybe I am a bit touched. Maybe there is something wrong with me.
It's a pill for you.
<laughs> Wish.
Now, if I can ask this, Camille, were you brought up in a particularly religious environment also that would also conflict with this?
Yes, you're dead on there. I was raised in a very strict Catholic household, and the priest even lived with us for a couple of years while we helped build the parish.
Oh, glory.
And I was even named after a nun, and I have no disrespect the Catholic, but even as a child, I knew I had too many questions that were not acceptable. And
how did you then know that intuitively you could not pursue to ask questions, particularly in a religious environment? Were you told something or just intuitively knew that?
I intuitively knew that. I don't understand how I did, but I just knew that I didn't discuss these things. And one experience was as a child at age 4 or 5, I would spin and spin and spin, and then I would have out-of-body experiences of where I would become a wren, a brown wren. And I literally saw myself flying down a clothesline, and I could see the clothespins, and after I came out of that journey, I ran back in the backyard, and sure enough, my mother had hung up clothes, and it was the exact same clothes. So,
fabulous.
It was just something that came to me naturally. Yeah. I didn't to work.
Yeah, and I also remember, I remember back as young as a year old being able to leave my body. But just so that our listeners understand, it's not that you entirely leave your body. There's a lot of references to they call that silver thread, that you're still connected with the body, but you're able to work with the astral body. Does that make sense to you?
That's it in a nutshell. And when I would come to, I would not tell a soul that this took place, but in my heart of hearts, I knew that what I had just experienced was real for me. And it was just...
Now, you eventually went on to pursue basically the field of metaphysics, even at a reasonably young age, I understand. You pursued herbology?
Herbology. I'm a master herbalist. And I'm not a practicing master herbalist because I unfortunately could not make a living doing that. But, yes, I did pursue that, and it just something And come to find out, after I'd already received my master's in herbology, I found out that I have an ancestor who was a well-known herbologist. So it was just maybe it's that DNA imprinting that you spoke about one day.
You know, and that's a very good point. And for the audience, too, I did a little peeking up on your ancestor. I went on to Wikipedia, and I like to do a little background check, you know. And Nicholas Culpepper, C-U-L-P-E-P-E-R. And mm-hmm. Next month would have been he would have been born 395 years ago.
Wow.
I did a little math. Now, Nicholas Culpepper actually dared to challenge the church. He was one of the first. He basically, from the reading I have done, insisted to have a free mind. And mm-hmm. his book, his first books is one of, it's still a very famous book. It's one of the most, basically one of the best sellers for a non-religious English herbalist book.
That's
so with
correct.
All these natural remedies, and he dared to challenge a lot of people back then. And so you have you got a big DNA imprint in there that's very exciting.
Well, I grew up in trouble all my life because I was always challenging the rules. So that must be where I got it from.
You know, I'm going to read something here that I think Doug Kelly will really appreciate also. That there's something, a famous quote by Nicholas Culpepper. He says something less profitable to him. I'm paraphrasing that little bit. He says, I consulted with my two brothers, Dr. Reason and Dr. Experience, and I took a voyage to visit my mother, Nature, by whose advice, together with the help of Dr. Diligence, I at last obtained my desire. And being warned by Mr. Honesty, a stranger in our days, to publish it to the world, I have done it. I love that. I just went, oh, I love this guy. You know, so, what a wonderful story for you to tell. I mean, so I gather that there was a very intuitive, or we could say psychic side to Nicholas Culpepper also. And this is what fascinates me, that the DNA imprinting, because also, just to say this too, you got your ministerial ordination with MCH Church also, did you?
That's correct.
Well, Nicholas's father was a clergy. So, you know, to follow the spiritual calling or to investigate a spiritual calling is imprinted, I think, in your DNA. And actually, I have quite a list of people in my family, particularly my father's side, who have been ministers or pastors, of course, largely of churches. But I have recently had a conversation with a great aunt who put 25 years into an Anglican church. And then one day she had an epiphany and said, there's something more than this. And she's now pursuing, in our terminology, a metaphysical calling. Very
wow.
Exciting.
That so is exciting.
Yeah, it is. So what brought you to the Metaphysics Institute, Camille?
What brought me to this particular institution was research. I researched many of their similar schools, and how do I put this? They were too frou-frou for me. I needed something that offered common sense, a firm footing on the ground. Even though I say I see spirits and I can journey out of my body, I'm also a very grounded individual. And I want to stay in touch with my reality. And I found through Doug's postings that he sounded like a gentleman who had a good head on his shoulders. And that was very important to me because I'm not one of these sing-song chanting type of people, as you can tell.
And I like it.
A lot of people expect you to be very soft and gentle and spiritual, to do real well in the spirit. That's not who I am. And when I saw and found Doug's website, and I should say IMHS, I was just thrilled, because like it was like I just hit home run. I hit a home run and I slid into home base. I felt now, very comfortable.
That being said, at this point in your life, what made you decide to pursue a degree or to pursue more studies, though?
Well, at age 50, let's say I was 52 at the time, it was, I had enough of staying under the radar. I was always afraid to tell people how I thought. I was always, as far as spiritual matters were concerned, because I live in a very religious area. And even the good many of the people I work with are very religious. And if I mention metaphysics, they immediately start talking to me about going to hell. And finally, I just basically came out of the closet.
I love it. That's a great term. I came out of the closet. And what was their response to that?
Well, of course, I'm going to hell in a handbasket. But other than that, they leave me alone. They steer away from the subject of religion with me now. So they are very afraid of me.
So how does that make you feel, Camille? I mean, as and again, you know, hopefully to benefit other people, too, in sharing your story, if you don't mind, you know, going into this a bit, that when there's that kind of segregation that begins to happen with you in your neighborhood and your workplace, how do you deal with that? How does that make you feel? How do you continue on then, knowing that you're on the outs, so to speak?
Well, Doug's course gave me the empowerment to be able to handle with that type of rejection. And it's not as mind-shattering as I thought it would be. It's not even hurtful to me anymore, because that's their problem. It's not my problem. And I'm very happy where I'm at now, whereas before I was miserable because I was not being honest with people. Now I am. And I think the tools were handed to me to be able to come out of the closet and be who I am. And yes, they do. There are those who will step aside from you because you do not think as they do, but you will never change that. So don't waste your time trying to. Just go about your business and be happy with who you are.
How did it change your friendships with even your good friends, let's say, your relationships?
Well, fortunately, I have a friend who's very spiritual. She's into study. She's a Greek Orthodox, but she blends it with spirituality or metaphysics. And she's fun to be with. And then the friends who don't understand this, they, like I said, basically do not discuss religion with me. And I'm always supportive of them and their religion, but they are not supportive of me and my beliefs. And
in this day and age, do you think that when there, you know, we are really attempting as a society to be more tolerant of, you know, race and culture and religions. Do you feel, though, I mean, I've often told people if I was a practicing Jew or if I were of some other religion, you would put your psychology into having to tolerate me. But because you call me a witch, you have no file to tolerate me.
Right.
Does that make sense to you?
It does. It does. And in fact, I have been called a witch because I do not follow the Bible, simply because I do not follow the Bible. And the Wiccan is a very, if you read into the Wiccan's history, it's an amazing philosophy.
I agree.
And if more people would take the time to read into religions, they would have a better understanding, and that fear factor that they have would not be in place. Unfortunately, that's not going to happen.
I like to think that there's somewhat of a growing tolerance, but people who are indoctrinated into a belief system that says anything that other than a particular God that's outside of themselves, or a particular Mother Mary, or a particular Archangel Michael, or, you know, anything outside of those particular spirits or entities mm-hmm. is wrong or bad, I think that they're never going to, at least in my view, there's no sense, they're not going to accept us in our ways. I know that sounds like we're so exclusive, doesn't it? But
we're a special club. you're right. And if I recall, maybe Doug said it or I read it, it takes 300 years to establish a new following, a new faith, a new philosophy. It takes 300 years of endeavors, and we are the pioneers, you might say. We're basically going into our, I would say about the fourth generation, because this actually started in about the 1870s when people started. Yeah, so we're the pioneers. We're the people who are going to bring a whole new philosophy, a whole new way of thinking, and it's going to be one day accepted as this is a good thing. And it is a good thing because we're more conscious. We don't have blinders on.
Well, I think that, again, if people were to do reading, a little bit of research, they would find that there were some amazing secret societies that began to surface in North America in the late 1800s and the early 1900s. There were, these newsletters and little booklets and, you know, these. There were some tremendous metaphysicians and philosophers in North America in the early 1900s. And you're right, as in these few early generations, it gives me a great amount of comfort to know that I don't compare myself to the likes of them by any stretch, but that we're in good company to be researchers, to be... I think what my issue is, again, for me, when you talk about other particular entities, schools, or other groups and organizations, is I don't like to stop where I am. I like to keep learning. And I find that in a lot of cases, people are looking for something, they find it, and they stop. They find a terminology or a way of thinking that's just acceptable, and they say, oh, good, now I'm spiritual, and they get about their economic lives. And I wanted something that, likened to what you're saying, is that made sense, that was practical, that I could look at it with my mind, not just my spirit self and my third eye, my other fourth dimension view, so to speak, but, you know, what is my mind? How have I been programmed? How can I deprogram? How can I see things in my through my own psychology and still expand my mind, and in big capital letters, mind meaning big capital letters self. So that's where I found it, that sensibility. I don't like to stop learning. I want to keep, I find everything just so darn fascinating.
And I'm in the same boat.
Yes, I can certainly hear that from you. You know, I have another question for you. What are you studying in particular? Are you specializing in something through the Metaphysics Institute? Is there a particular... I did read that you do Reiki and such also.
Correct. I do Reiki, and I'm studying for my hypnotherapy certification, and also I'm doing the life coach counseling sessions with Doug here very soon. I just want to be in a capacity or be in a mode to where I am able to help people on both a spiritual and here now level. And
that's fantastic.
I feel like hypnotherapy will help me help people relax enough to where they can explore what's going on in their lives.
That's fantastic. Is part of what you've set out for yourself in a goal, is that to work at this full time? Because you said earlier, you know, working as a herbologist for full time, you can't earn a living at that necessarily in your community or in your area. But do you feel that there might be a possibility that you could take that shift to working full time?
I plan to. We recently purchased land in Tennessee, and I'm setting up once I get a place to live there, I'm going to set up a teepee next to it. It has a running brook on it, and I'm going to allow people to come onto the property to do shaman retreats.
Awesome.
And I can combine the schooling that I had with and combine that with the school's learnings and also my shaman background and my life experiences and help those who need help. And it can all be done on my property. So I hope to one day make this a full-time life for me. It's not going to be a living, probably. It will be a life because I'll be at a place where I'm comfortable just helping people.
You see, now that was not in your bio, Camille. That was a good question to ask you.
I'm getting there.
No, this is that you're setting up some kind of place. So if I have this right, some kind of a place like a retreat center or a healing kind of venue for folks to come and get to know themselves better. Does that just kind of sum it up?
That sums it up in a nutshell. It's not going to be psychotherapy. It's just going to be spiritual based, but I am able to combine the life coaching with it and the hypnotherapy and the shaman journey. And people sometimes respond better to that type of stimulation than sitting 2 years with a psychiatrist.
I agree.
And that's where I plan. Hopefully the retreat, if I'm discreet enough, nobody will stop me from running it since they'll look at it as a commercial business. But that's my plan. That's my goal.
Well, you know, I've never been to Tennessee.
Well, you will need to come. Once I get the teepee up, you'll love it.
I have a teepee out in my yard also. I don't have a shell on it, and I noticed that I haven't oiled the poles for a couple of years, and they're warping a bit, so I have to go out and turn them or take them down and oil them. But I would like to just inject a couple of things about teepees. My mother's people all the way back are Sami, the Norwegians back to way up northern Norge, which was where the Samis are. My father's side is primarily Welsh, but Indian, North American Indian, and some English in there also. So teepees, people don't know this, the Sami people are teepee people. So yeah. The northern Scandinavians are teepee people. It's an incredible energy. I have yet to watch Survivor and anybody put up a teepee. I'm saying, why don't these people know to put up a teepee? They keep putting up these shelters, but they're in lean-tos and silliness, but they don't put up a teepee. If you mathematically, this is part of metaphysics, everyone, if you mathematically, correctly put up a teepee, do not get bugs. Bugs do not go in teepees.
That's so, good to know.
That's true. If you have...
Hi, folks. This is Doug Kelly. Unfortunately, our internet went down mid-show, and we were unable to resume it. We will try and redo this interview in either the next week or an upcoming week soon. Sorry for the inconvenience, and thanks so much for listening to the program.